and roll. I got Richard C. Wilson back on the Capital Racers show. My friend and partner, how are you doing today?
Great. How you doing, Ruben?
Always excited to run these podcasts. You know, I don't know what happens. I guess it's from all the Rockstar energy drink that I consume right before a show, man. I get so pumped up. Like, it just comes out of nowhere as soon as we get going. The Capital Racers show season 3 brought to you by pitchdecks.com. This is going to be a really fun conversation. I got the man, the myth, the legend, Richard C. Wilson. All right, man. So how about we start here? Because I have so much stuff that I want to cover with you today. But for those in my audience that are not familiar with Richard Wilson, tell us a little bit about your background, how you got into raising capital and real estate syndications and stuff.
Sure. I'll give you the 2-minute quick version. So I grew up around my dad raising capital for nonprofits. He's brought in over $1 billion from donors to nonprofit campaigns. I went to meetings with him growing up and drove him around. Out of college, I did risk consulting, paid a lot of money, but it was super boring. So I paid my MBA in cash, and then I got a job in commercial real estate and capital raising. And I turned down the commercial real estate job, went the capital raising route. And while raising capital, I realized I was calling all these wealth advisors, but a lot of them didn't have clients that had any money. Some of them were called family offices. They had all the money. So it's kind of like, why'd you rob the bank? It's like, well, that's where the money was. So I figured out, okay, I'll only call on family offices and figure that out. And it was super hard to do. I didn't know what a family office was. I didn't know what they preferred, where they were, how to get a list of them. And there were no trail guides in the industry. So at age 24, 25, I started studying them, started sharing what I was learning. My blog took off and started getting 3, 5, 10,000 hits a day. I spoke 250 times in 14 countries. And over the last 15 years, we've grown and written a dozen books, and we've hosted 185 live events. And we have 3,000 to 5,000 ultra wealthy private investors in our club. And that's essentially the last 15 years of my life in 2 minutes. You know, it's basically how I got here.
Crazy. So what kind of stuff were you raising for in the beginning days? What kind of real estate were you raising capital for?
At the very beginning, it was actually hedge fund and separate managed account products is where I really cut my teeth on that. I also helped raise capital for a high tech company before that. And so that's where I really learned the industry and just cold called through the green Standard & Poor's old investor, institutional investor books. And so I really got into the real estate side later.
Interesting. Okay, let me take you through a progression of the Capital Raiser show. In the early days, I was asking people, like, how do you guys raise capital for stuff? And it was very enlightening to me. But what the kind of main answer that I got in the first maybe 60 episodes was like, how to raise money from limited partners. Eventually, over time, I started realizing that you can raise from co-GPs, that you have access to institutions, you can raise with creative finance. You can, at some point, maybe about 100 episodes in, I started realizing that you could actually start a fund. I didn't know that that was even like within my reach or grasp of possibilities. And what I ended up doing was, like, after talking to all these sponsors and all these capital raisers, I had this light bulb moment. And I was like, I wonder if I can put these guys together and make money. And all the attorneys I interviewed, I was asking them, how do I do this legally and stay compliant with an SEC guidelines? And they're like, dude, in order to do that, you have to start your own fund. So eventually it went off and partnered with a fund manager. But I think the avatar, the person that listens to this particular show, is like the scaling capital raiser, the scaling multifamily syndicator or commercial real estate asset syndicator. And one of the things that I think was very kind of obscure to me in the early days was, what the heck is a family office? Like, how do you get access to it? Does it make sense to raise capital from these guys? And that's a whole nother ball game and world that I think a lot of my audience is not, even though we've talked about it numerous times, I don't think that they're really exposed to what this whole thing is and how it works. And like, how do you get access to it? And when does it even make sense to do that versus raising from limited partners or co-GP structures? Why don't we kind of dive into that a little bit? Because I've heard a lot of things about family offices, that they can kind of leave you hanging, that they want control, that if you write docs and then try and raise from a family office and then come back to them or go to them and say, hey, we would love to participate with you in a capital raise, they might rip up all of your docs that you just spent like $17,000 building and then rewrite them. And then you just kind of wasted all that money. And maybe that's something that we should kind of talk about. So from your perspective or from your understanding, tell us more about family offices and when it makes sense to use them or partner with them in multifamily syndications or commercial real estate asset syndications.
Yeah, for sure. So a lot of responses to that. First of all, family office is simply a solution for someone with a lot of money because you have different problems. Like Puff Daddy said, more money, more problems. So you need to have different structures in place. So you don't want to walk down to Bank of America and just dump your money in their mutual funds typically. As a family becomes more ultra wealthy, they need more holistic planning and they'd like to do more customized things. So one thing to keep in mind is that one of our members, they had never heard of family offices before, came to our events, used our investor databases and our quarterly investor conferences and raised an $8 million check and a $40 million check over a year and a half period. And it took them off. And now just 6.5 years later, they're managing $1 billion in assets. And they had an experience where if they bring in one $40 million check, that's equal to 400 $100,000 investors. So if you need to tear up a $17,000 document to do that, then just do that. Maybe you can use that document later for small fry investors. Yeah, you might have to kiss some family office frogs to find one that you actually want to work with. Yes, they kiss a lot of frogs to allocate money to. I just spent 5 hours with a $100 million net worth family last week setting up their family office with them. And they only see 50 or 100 deals a year. Because we have just under 2 million social media followers and we run these media platforms, we see thousands of deals a year. So our top 1% is much, much better than this family who they only have one deal if they look at their top 1%. They can't even choose between them. They want to, the sophisticated family, they want to see a lot of flow and only choose the best of the best in terms of structure, team, strategy, timing, niche, all of that stuff. And so you have to have the mindset of planting seeds that might not bear fruit for a while. Our number one family office client is a billionaire. I met him 11 years ago. It took us 6 years to get our first deal done. And now we've closed 18 deals together. And 2 weeks ago, we closed a $30 million deal. And in Q1 next year, we have an LOI signed on a $350 million deal, which will be a single transaction of 16 assets. And so it takes time. And if you're not in this for the medium to long term, then you shouldn't be trying to work with the ultra wealthy because they're going to want to get to know you over time, custom structure things. And yeah, it's their right not to do the deal at the last minute if things are found in due diligence that don't make sense or the market changes, or just as you would if you were ultra wealthy and then something changed the reality in front of you. Those are my base comments, just to consider how many $100,000 investors one check can replace.
That's fantastic. Well, this is going to be a lot of fun. This is going to be the very first episode of season 3 of the Capital Raiser Show. Now sponsored and owned, part owned by my friend Richard Wilson. So I'm curious about this, man. Let's talk about this and make this official announcement that you are my full-blown partner on the Capital Raiser Show. Super excited. I know for me, like, the opportunity to work with you, to use and leverage your name brand, and to have access to all these family offices and hang out with you at these different circles is going to be great. And then at some point, we're going to write a book, which is going to be really cool. So I'm really excited about this. What did you want to accomplish by being a part owner of the Capital Raiser Show, just out of curiosity?
Sure. I'll share transparently what I wanted to accomplish. And then also we should talk about the strategy of doing what we did when we partnered. So, but first of all, we have a division called pitchdecks.com, where it's an investor relations marketing agency. We put together people's pitch decks, capital raising materials. We don't advertise it, but people who come to our capital raising workshops at the Family Office Club put their hand up and say, hey, can you help me implement this? And so we've got a full 8-person full-time employee staff. 8 out of our 22 employees are basically doing that, implementing marketing and capital raising strategies for employees. We don't raise the capital for people. We do all the materials, some investor lead gen, positioning, PR, social media, et cetera. So that's one reason. The other reason is that for 15 years now, we've run our investor club. We do 15 live events per year. We have around 1,000 subscribers who pay a membership, and the membership gets you access to all of the 15 live events. Most people come to just 5 to 7 a year that fit their schedule. It gets you access to the investor club portal. It gets you access to feedback on your materials every 3 months. And we have 800 investor mandates recorded in the membership portal. Reach out to Ruben if you're interested in either the Family Office Club membership or in pitchdecks.com and that service. But those are some of my motivations, is that we have found in our business that if we write a book and give away $500 an hour quality advice and we sell it for $5 or just give away the PDF for free, people use the strategies, like the strategies, and then they thank us. You know, some CEOs of multi-billion dollar family offices have come to me and said, because of your book, I got my job as the CEO of this $3 billion multifamily office. I was just working in wealth management. And I just want to thank you because you helped me grow my career. You helped me start my family office, or you helped me start my investment firm. My friend Michael, he wanted to buy a cannabis company. He was trying to raise $8 million. He was struggling to raise the first $4 million. We had one phone call with him. He came to one event, started learning more. He raised the $8 million he needed, went on to raise $40 million. And last summer on stage, as a surprise, I didn't know he was going to say this, he credited us in selling that company last year, 3 years later, for $120 million. So not everyone comes into our club and sells their company for $120 million, obviously. But the point of bringing that up is that we're a community, we're an investor club. And if we can add value first, just like we are trying to on this podcast, to people who are raising capital, then it all comes around and creates good karma in the industry. And you've done 190 interviews at the point when I had met you and had done a good job and just have a good personality for a podcast show on capital raising. So that's why
it's so fun.
I love it.
So season three. All right. So season one was LP capital. Season two was fund structure. Season three, we're going to integrate a lot more family office guys. So hang on to your seats, guys. This is going to be a crazy roller coaster ride this year, hanging out with the ultra rich on the Capital Raiser show. It's going to be a great time. So I want to ask you a little bit more about the business from a business to business perspective. How do you use the family office club? Like, do you make a lot of money from that? Are you much more interested in the money that you make on the syndication side? Tell us about that kind of stuff.
Funny enough, when we started, it was really, we had a little bit of investor databases, mostly our live events. And the smartest people I would meet who are worth the most amount of money would always say, oh, well, this isn't like your whole business. Like, obviously, you're not just running these events. And that was pretty much all I was doing back then. And I'd have to say, oh, I've got some other things in mind and we're working on it. But I didn't really have a good answer. And they were obviously telling me the relationships in the room and the relationships you have on this podcast are worth more than the sponsorship revenue you have on the podcast. Like, the relationships is where the money really is. Mm-hmm. And so they told me that early on. So that is the area that's growing fastest in our business, is the investment side. But we do make money off of running the platform. We do between $4 and $5 million of revenue in a traditional sense. And then we pick up equity stakes and real estate assets, et cetera, each year as we go on the investment side of things. The trick is, I learned from Dan Kennedy, is to generate a system that has self-liquidating lead gen. Meaning, when we do 15 live events a year, four of them are big 1,000-person investor summits, 10 of them are capital raising workshops. At the capital raising workshop, that workshop makes money in itself because we bring in new members, we're satisfying current members, but then also a few of those people in the room will put their hand up and say, hey, we need investor relations marketing agency help. And then the lead gen for our marketing agency is free because of that workshop. We've tried to design a system where we have a community and we have a platform, and the byproducts are really good deal flow, better investment structures all the time, better investment strategies being heard all the time, and then investor flow. And then you take all those ingredients and you come over here and make some soup and you get these investment deals done or joint ventures done. And navigating all of that in a way that leaves everyone with a smile on their face, where you're fully transparent and following all the compliance regulatory rules, all of that, it's nuanced and you have to be very thoughtful about how you do that. But that's basically our strategy as we grow.
And what kind of assets do you like to purchase or participate in?
Sometimes we get put on the advisory board for companies and we'll just have a 3-5% equity stake and we'll just be an advisor to them. So those sometimes come at us from random niches, but the area we proactively focus on in the operating area, if it's not an investor club asset, which is core to our business, would be medical and dental practices that are doing millions of year in revenue and profitable with multiple locations. We like those on the operating business side. And then on the real estate side, we invest into short-term rental properties. We have a 10-property Airbnb investment fund called investorresidences.com.
Oh, yeah. We wanted to talk about that.
Yeah. Happy to go into that later if you think people would want to hear more. But that's one area. And then one niche we're doing a lot of due diligence on right now is in the acquisition of motels and converting motels into multifamily and apartments. We have a partner there we have under deep due diligence. We've spent a lot of time with them. So that's an area we're going into. We like things that are niche and unique and not like everybody else in the industry.
Well, I'm sure you'd be excited to hear that you probably made a really wise investment choice By the time this airs, we're going to be just a little bit shy of 1 million downloads. Wow. I was on this platform. I think it's called listennotes.com. I'll see if I can figure it out. But it basically ranks 2.9 million podcasts across the entire world. And the Capital Raiser Show is ranked in the top 1.5% of all podcasts in the world, which is crazy because it's such a niche specific podcast. You would think that like you'd have to be talking about something really general, but I guess people are very hungry for capital raising information. So let's kind of go back to this, right? So you've been really focused in on capital raising. I think your very first book, if I'm correct, was a book called Capital Raising. Is that correct?
No, we'd written a few books before that, but some of them were so old and so long ago, I don't even want people to go look them up. But that's one of my first books specific to capital raisers that'd be most helpful. And yeah, it's free to get at capitalraising.com, by the way.
Yeah. So also very curious about this, because I know that there's a lot of syndicators that are listening into the show or people that are aspiring authors. Tell us a little bit about the creation of a book and what have you implemented? What have you learned along the way about why you write a book? What do you use it for? And how do you get this thing published and distributed?
Man, we could do a whole podcast episode only on that someday, because there's so much to unpack there. And on your podcast, hitting 1 million downloads, that's amazing. If you shoot me a link or a graphic or whatever, I can pump that on social media hard and get you another X number of followers. Would love to do that for you. So on the book side, there's so many ways it's so powerful. We've met 800, 400, 100 million plus net worth families that have worked with us. Some of them doing deals with us before even meeting in person because of books. We've had one of our members, Ahmed, he heard at one of our workshops, he should write a book. He had only raised a few million dollars for his distressed mortgage note business, I believe it was at the time. He wrote the book and he said within 6 weeks, it brought in $600,000 specifically because of the book. We also have a friend, Ryan Burke, who had heard us beating the drum on, you need to write a book, you need to write a book. He had heard it from some other places as well, but he partially credits us with doing so. And he raised $30 million of equity in 6 months after writing his book. So it's not like just writing a book will magically have you raised a lot of capital. It obviously needs to add genuine value. It needs to have the exact right title. And I have interviewed Brian Tracy, who's one of my mentors early on. He's written 83 books. He says that the title of the book is by far the most important. People don't like the title. They're never going to read the book. They're not going to meet with you. And it's a form authority building. So I've studied Robert Cialdini quite a bit after my MBA, studied psychology of influence at the Harvard ALM school. There's ways to improve your credibility, your authority, and your influence. And one of them is writing a book. Whatever topic you write a book on, percentage of people will say, oh, okay, he's at least a semi-expert on that topic, apparently. Maybe we should consider working with him or investing with him, et cetera. So I have a few more points I could go into, but I don't want to be long-winded on every question you ask me.
I know, we have so much to cover. One of the things I want to make sure that we don't leave kind of in the dust, and we sometimes do that here. Like you mentioned the creation, or possibly let's talk a little bit about the creation of our partnership and putting together the LLC. I think a lot of people are very curious about, like, especially if they're going from passive investing to active investing, like, how do I create this whole negotiation and agreement and LLC and co-GP thing? Like, what do I need to discuss and consider? Maybe we can dive into a little bit of that, sure. You know, and how we created our LLC and why it took a couple months. These things typically don't happen overnight, by the way, but talk to us about your perspective there.
Yeah, sure. So most important thing is to listen very closely to the counterparty and be flexible, open-minded, and be medium to long-term oriented. If you're only thinking about short-term, then you're going to scare away the most qualified partners you can talk to. If you're thinking about the medium to long-term, then things will go better and you'll attract a higher quality partner. That's the case with big and medium-sized family offices. Like one call we had this morning, the family is willing to put $2 to $4 million to work with a group that needed to raise that much capital in the next 3 months or so. And the reason they'd be open to it is they wanted to deal with very efficient, small fees upfront and annually, structured more handsome back-end profit share, but they also want collateral so that it's very unlikely they lose their money. They also want the GP to put up 10% of the equity and be in a first loss position. So if they sell the asset for 90% of what they bought it for, the GP loses 100% of their money. And the LP doesn't lose any of their money. So they're double protected on the front end. They're not feed all the way along. And on the back end, there's a healthy profit share for the sponsor in return for doing that for the family. So custom structuring it can be a way of just going to a family and saying, well, how would you structure this? You could structure it any way you wanted to, knowing it has to be fair and motivating to us. What do you wish everyone would structure their deals like? And what's most important to you? And they might say, security is more important than the IRR, or getting to know you and having full transparency is more important. Sometimes you can custom structure a deal because others are skeptical of you and you're so confident in your deal, you structure it so that they have big upside, but you do too, but in that order. So the way, this is an example, it came out in an article last week from one of our members, came to our community and was not familiar with the family office space. And she found a deal that she thought could produce a 70% IRR. It's a very quick condo conversion flip. It's going to take 18 months to do. She got in there, found a capital partner, and negotiated a crazy deal. She basically told them, we'll give you, because they said they don't want to do the deal. She's too early. She said, okay, well, I'm very confident. So why don't we give you a 30% preferred return, a 30% IRR on this deal? And they said, okay, and if you get anything under 30%, we just get 100% of the profits. And she said, yeah, that's fine, because we know we're going to nail this thing and get at least a 50, 60% IRR. They did it. They ended up achieving a 70% IRR, and she made more money than the investor did because of that structure. And so they've done several more deals with her, but in a more traditional manner now. But on the first deal, she had to say, hey, look, you're taking risk, so let me take risk too, and give you profits first and have me lose first. And if you find that combo, it can get somebody over the hump of, instead of waiting until you're 100 million of AUM, maybe they'll come in right now if you remove some risk and allow them to benefit first and you get hurt first.
Awesome. Okay, cool. So let's talk about running conferences and gear this specifically to the syndicator out there that's like wondering, maybe I should do a conference and get a bunch of people here. I actually have this same kind of thought process. Maybe I should run my own conference. I have the network. I have the people. I know that I could fill the rooms. Right. But here's kind of the question that I've been asking myself when I talk to other people that have launched conferences. They're typically doing it because they have something to sell. And at this point in my journey, I don't have anything to sell. So after doing the numbers of what it might cost to run an event, if I have nothing to sell, I'm just going to lose a bunch of money and become like special for being a conference host, but out $100,000. So it doesn't make sense for me, at least at this point, until I become some kind of capital raiser coach or guru or something like that. But like for the syndicators out there, like, why do you run conferences? What kind of advice can you give to the syndicator out there wondering if they should start a conference?
Yeah, sure. It's definitely a lot of work. And at the beginning, if you're going to do one, you want to find a partner or two who would benefit from that same audience. And maybe since you're doing all the work, they might be willing to cover part of the catering fee or the rental fee, and then you're able to host the event with less risk to yourself. They may also have some clients that they could invite that would help fill the room or help pay for some of that cost, et cetera. I tell them you can bring 50 of your clients as long as you cover this much of catering, this much of the hotel. That's one thing to keep in mind. One approach I like to have in business is when you talk to somebody, you can just genuinely listen to them and suggest something that naturally is really authentically valuable for them to do next. If you have many different ways of working with somebody, right? If the only thing you have to sell somebody is a gold Rolex, then you're always just trying to come back and pushing your gold Rolex on them and trying to sell them that thing. If you work with somebody to, like with a family office, we can help someone set up a family office. We can help them source much better deal flow from our network. We can help them structure and negotiate a co-GP deal. They could invest in an Airbnb, the investor residences fund. Or just come to our events and we'll introduce you to other investors just like you that you could trade notes with and resources with. We're not out just to sell them a gold Rolex. And then that makes people feel much more comfortable because then what you say actually is in line with meeting their goals versus trying to hard sell them something. So ideally over time, you would host an event where you charge a little bit to come in so you're not losing your shirt. You have a couple partners to help you with sponsoring the event. You keep it small to begin with until you test it all out. And then you have two or three ways that you could work with people. And one way could be an expensive program. One way could be something that's inexpensive. One way could be something that takes a while to develop, a long sales cycle. Some things are shorter sales cycles. So that's the ideal, is to orient around something like that. But there's so many events and conferences going out there. You really have to think, how is ours going to be unique and worth everyone's time? Because everyone gets emails and offers to come to all types of events via Facebook and their inbox. So later on, we're going to talk about advice for capital raisers. And it comes back to positioning. And that's basically part of what I'm saying here. You have to position your event or conference to be super unique apart from others.
Okay, cool. So Capital Raiser Show is now, so we've been doing these short video clips, these trailers, what I call. We've been posting them for multiple years, going on year three pretty soon here. Actually, yeah, it is going to be going year three. August 30th is our 3-year anniversary of this show. And it's been very time consuming to do these videos, to do audio production. There's a lot that goes into a podcast that people don't think about. But I'm very blessed and fortunate to be partnering with you because your company, PitchDecks.com, has now taken all of the video production of these trailers, of these mini clips, off of my hands, which allows me to go and talk to investors now. Talk to us a little bit about what PitchDecks does. They can do video, they can do video content, marketing, create and review PitchDecks. Talk to us about what that company does.
Yeah, sure. So there's 20,000 marketing agencies on planet Earth, but how many of them run an investor club with 1,000+ capital raisers, 3,000+ investors, and they don't just make it look pretty, they understand what's effective with working with investors. There's probably just a couple of those on planet Earth out of the 20,000. So that's basically what we do. We'll handle anything soup to nuts, from creating a brand, creating a website, creating a pitch deck, a one pager. Everybody should have a video of their founder in their one pager in their pitch deck. Most people don't. Everyone should have a one sentence summary of why your deal is very compelling and why someone should lean forward and say, here's the benefit of working with us. And here's why we're unique against our 20,000 competitors and whatever niche that you're in. A lot of people are missing components of their materials, or if they're in the real estate space, they always have their next deal, or the deck needs to be constantly updated, or the website needs to be constantly updated. And if you don't look professional or institutional quality and have that polish, people will trust you with less of their capital or none of their capital. And the way to think about this is you walk into a job interview or to meet with an investor and you have stained sweatpants and a hole in your t-shirt. They might just think, okay, this person's not taking themselves too seriously, or wonder how professional this person is. Just like if you email somebody from a Yahoo email address and you don't bother to get an $8 domain name, you don't bother to put up at least a 3-to-5-page website, you don't bother to have a logo that doesn't look like a high school clip art logo, or you just put in PowerPoint and slant the font and make the font purple or something. There's lots of really god-awful things designed in the space, and it really just doesn't do you justice if you're raising capital and your stuff isn't good or great. So we just say put 0.1% of the money you're raising into your materials and you'll raise capital faster and easier. So if you're raising $100 million, we're not saying to spend $1 million on your marketing materials. We're saying to spend $100,000 if you're raising $100 million. And then your stuff is going to look excellent. If you're only raising $10 million, then, you know, try putting at least $10,000 into the materials. It's 0.1%. And if that sounds expensive still, then just tell yourself, okay, we're not going to raise 100 million. We'll raise 100 million and $100,000. So just raise a little bit of extra capital and then it pays for itself.
Okay. I did want to mention real quick, because I was confused about this, but Andres from down in Colombia, he explained to me, if you become a member of the Family Office Club, you automatically get some access to pitch decks, or at least a review of your pitch deck. So when you're creating a presentation, an investor presentation, as a member of the Family Office Club, you actually can get pitch decks and the rest of the Family Office Club team to look at your deck and then give you some advice on how to improve it and make it so that you can more easily and effectively raise capital. Is this correct so far?
Right. So out of our 1,000 members, maybe only 100 or 200 are in the space where they could both afford a retainer to engage us and they need it right now. And so what we'll do for all of our members is every 3 months, we'll review your materials. It's a way for us to get to know you and give you a 7-page report back on all the different things you could do to improve your pitch deck, your one pager, some strategy related feedback. And then that coincides nicely with our 10 workshops per year, because we go through about 30 capital raising strategies at one of those workshops. And the workshops, you're hearing from me, maybe a guest speaker or two, and we're just downloading tons of capital raising strategies to you. And it's very different than the investor summit, where you're hearing from 50 speakers on stage in a day, mostly investors. And you get to hear from so many investors, you start to pick up on those common trends. And so it's the combination of the feedback on your materials every quarter, the workshops, and the investor summits just give you a really holistic view of like what you should be doing, what you should not be doing. And I think that, Ruben, you've been to one or two of our workshops, I think, already, mm-hmm. right?
Two. Yeah. The one in Newport was amazing, by the way. Can't wait for the one in New York coming up here.
Awesome.
By the way, go check out all the events. You can go to capitalraiser.com, which is Richard and I's new brand. You can get access to the pitch decks and special offers that you can't get if you go to familyoffices.com or pitchdecks.com. You can get special offers on what we provide at capitalraiser.com. So make sure to go there first, but go ahead. Tell me more about what you were going to say.
That's pretty much it. But yeah, since we're working together, you know, going to capitalraiser.com is the most simple way, or just reaching out to Ruben if you're already chatting with him personally. The most important thing in capital raising, if someone wants to be very successful, is integration or integrity. So who you put on your team has to be aligned with you. What your values are have to be aligned with your actions. What you put in the pitch deck should do justice to your experience. The structure you offer people should be aligned with what those investors really want. So everything has to be as aligned as possible. And what we've found is that the more that we're in alignment with where we're trying to go, and that genuinely shows through the content we put out and the amount of value we try to add within our books and at our live events, et cetera, then the better our business goes. So I would just encourage those who are trying to raise more capital to remove things from your life and business that are not in line with where you're trying to go, and just get everything kind of synced up and pointed in the same direction at once.
Okay, cool. In the upcoming year or so, I am going to be doing an audiobook. I'm actually going to read pitchdecks.com, or I should say pitchdecks, the book, and Capital Raising, the book. So look out for that if you want a free copy, because we're not going to have enough time to go deep into capital raising, but we can provide you with some very interesting information about what you need to do to create a good pitch deck and do marketing for capital raising, and what are the effective strategies for capital raising if you go to capitalraising.com or capitalraiser.com. You can get copies of all these books and whatnot. Real quick, before we go into the lightning round, let's pick one specific topic about capital raising that maybe we can dive into for about a minute. What would you say for the person that's scaling or looking to raise more capital? What kind of advice can you give them?
Yeah, I think that positioning is one of the most important things, how you position yourself. You could have an excellent offering, excellent returns, but if there's no context around it, nobody will want it. If there's no unique positioning, no one will want it. And so getting that one sentence down and really knowing your competition well enough and your investors well enough and what type of investor is really going to be attracted to your offering in the first place. And then you dial in that one liner that'll connect the dots between, hey, we're unique from all these people, but we're really specially structured to be really valuable to you as an investor. And you really hit them between the eyes as, oh, wow, I didn't know that something like that was available. Or I've never heard of that strategy before, but that makes way more sense than how everybody else charges us all these fees up front in every year and then takes this profit share. I mean, we really prefer having someone just charge us the cost of running the strategy, not earn any fees off of anything, and then take a more fat back end profit share. You want them to have that knee-jerk response like, oh, wow, I've never heard of that before. And usually people just completely fail at this. And I'll ask them what they do. And they say, oh, we're a small boutique private equity fund, or we're a private equity sponsor, or we're a workforce housing multifamily sponsor. It's like, okay, well, you and 10,000 other people. So you might as well have just said nothing, because nobody is going to want to learn more. Or they'll just say, oh, okay, well, I already know 24 of those guys, so I'm not sure if it's worth digging into this email. You want to have that half sentence, that one liner that really positions you strongly. That's why we are Family Office Club. We started hosting some investment conferences related to private equity a while ago and real estate. And what we found is that nobody wanted to come to our events when they were called Wilson conferences. They wanted to come to Family Office Club, you know? That's fantastic. So you want to hit people between the eyes with exactly what you do, like Capital Raiser Show. There's no mystery behind what you do. Yes. Or pitchdecks.com. There's no mystery. Investorresidences.com. Buying Airbnb homes. Pretty obvious. So a lot of people just like to have some Greek god name to their business, and nobody yes. knows what it means. And nobody wants to ask but your spouse or their last name, Wilson Capital. And it just, nobody knows what you do, you know? So you have to make it as clear as possible and position it as strongly as possible.
That's a really good point. Tell you what, audience, I'm going to give you something here. I'm going to invite, because we really need to expose some of the capital raising strategies and possibly do an entire show just on capital raising with you and your background. So I'm going to invite you back to a special series that we've been doing on the Capital Racer Show called Build Your Legacy. And it's in front of a live audience with anywhere from like 20 to 50 or maybe even 100 people are going to be on there on any given month. Or I think we're going to plan on starting it, doing it every couple of weeks. But I'll tell you what, guys, I will have Richard come and party down with us and talk for an entire hour just about capital raising. So be on the lookout for that. I didn't prep Richard for that, but it makes a lot of sense, like, to give you guys some real concrete information on capital raising from a variety of different places, and that will be coming. So keep an eye out for that. So with that, let's go into the lightning round. I've taken you through this before. This is a lot of fun, but let's start with this question. What's the best vacation you've ever taken?
I went to Singapore for a conference. We were able to go to Bali for 10 days. And Bali is one of my favorite places in the world. Just had an awesome time. So I definitely recommend to people checking out Bali and staying for more than a couple of days if you can.
Fantastic. What's your favorite book of any kind?
Favorite book is What It Takes, which is by Stephen Schwarzman, who's the founder of Blackstone. It's an awesome book.
How about this? This one might be a little tricky. Favorite childhood memory?
Probably going to Costa Rica and Hawaii with my family growing up and just surfing with my brother and just playing with the family.
Can you share any real estate war stories?
The last deal we got done was with a $4 billion REIT, and it took us 14 months to negotiate the deal. It's a $30 million deal. And for the first 9 months, they walked away from the table three times saying they wouldn't accept the terms. And eventually they did accept the terms and we got the deal done, but we didn't think we were going to multiple times. So we just had to stick at it and kind of stick to our guns on it.
Do you have any hacks for breaking through limiting beliefs?
I have like a brainwashing strategy for myself, and I happen to have it right here on my desk, so you know that I actually follow this strategy. But I create this one pager and I read this every single day of my life, and this has changed my whole life. I tell this to a lot of people. Everyone ignores me, and I don't think anyone really implements it. I know like two people that have.
I have something exactly like that, actually.
I hang this up. Where I shave, I have it, and I travel with it, and it's on my desk. And so it's like, here are my monthly goals. Here are my quarterly goals, with yellow. Here are my annual goals, the blue. And then these are all one-liners. So when I read a great book, I'll summarize the whole book in one few words and a few key words. And if you did all these, if I did all these things, I would be massively successful. So every day I start my day with my monthly, quarterly, annual goals. I read all these one-liners, about 40 different little one-liner keywords. And my brain is oriented towards that. And anything that's not fitting this filter is out of alignment and out of integrity with who I am and where I'm going. And this is my biggest hack. That's awesome that you're doing that, because most people are not.
Yeah, it's not in a piece of paper, but it's in my book. It's something that I refer to as an intention statement. I created back in 2004, I believe. And every year I revise it, strengthen it, add different things. Like one of the most recent things had like all of these goals and things on there, but there was no compelling reasons, or I should say, I was very much doing it from a mind model kind of thing. Like, this is exactly what I want to create, the woman, the money, you know, the people that I want to help. And this is all of the things, but there wasn't anything saying why I deserved it or if I was worthy of it. So I incorporated that into it. So it makes it more powerful, but I have it in my phone. And what you're talking about is having it on a laminated sheet. So I think I'm going to condense it and put it on there so I can get through it quickly too, because it is a little bit longer.
The best person who's ever spoken at any of our events was Jeff Hoffman. He talks about this idea and 30 other awesome ideas, and you can stream the video of his talk, which had half of the room of grown 50-year-old males crying. You can stream that at billionaires.com, and you can stream it for free, and it's an awesome talk. It's totally related to what we just talked about.
Fantastic. How long do you want to live?
100 years old sounds like a good round number. It seems like the average male lives till 77, and I think in 100 years, probably at that point, may not be too much fun to be alive past 100, but for now, 100.
Do your spiritual philosophies have anything to do with your success in business?
Yes, I think part of it is just a general sense of creating good karma, just doing the right thing, treating other people well, and planting a bunch of positive seeds, whether or not they ever come back to you. Then you don't feel guilty for things that you've earned in life. You don't feel like, oh, I need to give back because I've sucked life from other people. It's like you give back every day the way you treat your employees or the way you treat your clients.
What do you love about going on outdoor adventures?
The no internet, no cell phone time. You can hang out just with the guys and just disconnect from the email inbox, which is typically just streaming through my life. So,
okay, so short answer on this. Best way to raise capital from your perspective?
Position yourself uniquely from everyone else in a way that focuses you on one investor type that wants to get sucked into that.
Nice. Have you, two more questions. Have you ever experienced a miracle or had a near-death experience?
Yeah, in college, my car spun around and smashed in half, a cement barrier in the rain. And from that point on, I graduated early and started working a lot harder.
Crazy. All right, last question brought to you by Shienna Amigo, one of our great listeners. I believe she's listened to every single episode I've ever released, which is pretty insane. What impact would you like to leave in the world?
Impact would be, I want to show people how it's not just more important to be ultra healthy than ultra wealthy. but it can be virtuous, and being ultra healthy can increase your path to being ultra wealthy and be an example of doing that in real time as a person of integrity who's ultra healthy and ultra wealthy.
Great answers on the lightning round. I love that part of the show. Shout out to the Capital Raiser Nation. Thanks for tuning in. Please leave us a 5-star written review. Shout out to Legacy Acquisitions and to our sponsors, Good Egg Investment, Syndication Pro, Apartment Educators, The Family Office Club, and PitchDex.com. And really excited to be working with you with PitchDex and Family Office. So this is going to be a great deal of fun over the next multiple years. But let's leave the audience with, how do they get a hold of you?
My email is just richard@familyoffices.com. But I've got a 22-person team that supports me. So if you just go to familyoffices.com, we've got a chat box that pops up. You can call our number. Let us know that Ruben sent you over. Or go to capitalraiser.com. And you can also connect with us through Ruben. And that's easy enough as well.
Okay, rock and roll. Last question of the day. Do you have any parting words of wisdom for the aspiring capital raiser or syndicator as they scale in their journey?
Yes, try to focus on one type of investor with 60 to 80% of your energy. So you get really dialed in on how to sell to law firm partners or business owners in your niche or a Porsche club or a type of dentist or something like that. So it's super dialed in and you just nail that investor niche.
Well, this has been a lot of fun. I can't wait to have you back so we can talk about specifically for the entire show just on capital raising. Be on the lookout for that, guys. With that, we're going to let you go. Richard, enjoy the rest of your day, man. Love being your partner on this, man. This is
awesome. Thanks, Ruben.
Yep.
Appreciate it.